Hi, I'm Conan Tobias, the editor-in-chief and publisher of Tattle Creek. In 1998, Alfred Holden wrote a feature on the history of Toronto's Dupont Street, an industrial east-west corridor that was once the northernmost border of the city, and today marks the tip of the downtown Toronto core. Alfred's piece has lived on online over the last 24 years, and has probably been the most popular and most referenced story Tattle Creek has ever published. For Tattle Creek number 50, Alfred revisited Dupont Street, not from a historical perspective this time, but as someone who's observed its many changes over the past quarter century. And Alfred is here with me today to talk a bit about Dupont Street. Hi, Alfred.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me in.
Always a pleasure. So for those who don't know or who aren't familiar with the city, can you give listeners a little bit of history of Dupont?
Well, it's an east-west corridor that was cobbled together from a number of other streets. And it's along parallel to a railway track, the Canadian Pacific Main Line through Toronto. And that led to its development as really an industrial street. And through the 20th century, it was a really big producer of just about everything we might want to consume, or even sort of industrial materials, giant gears and things. Over time, it has evolved, as you might expect. And I told the story of its greatness, its zenith, for you a long, long time ago. And I've been watching it ever since, sort of by default, because I don't live very far away.
Yeah, you and I have both lived a few blocks from DuPont for decades now. And so, I mean, it's obviously a part of your day-to-day life, but what is it about DuPont that's made it such a fascination for you? Because you have, as you said, you haven't just casually observed it walking around, you've actively observed it walking around.
Well, it's actually a very long street, and I think it touches on most people who live in Toronto, it touches on their lives, partly because people use it as a traffic corridor. The traffic is really fierce, and it's had a lot of impact over time on the experience you have of the street, and your image of the street as kind of a gritty, somewhat unpleasant place. But as I've written also, that over time you observe this, and it strikes you as a very live creature that has accomplished a lot of things. Even while in the last 25 years I wrote about its zenith, but since then it has changed so much and evolved that you sort of are startled sometimes to understand or to be conscious of what you've witnessed.
Yeah, as you mentioned, your first piece was very much a history. And I think when we did the first piece in 1998, we were kind of expecting things to gentrify a bit. And it did kind of slowly, but it happened very, very slowly. It feels like it's happening faster now. Is that the case? Is it ramping up a bit? Is it a different street?
It's absolutely, but it's gone in a direction that I did not predict. And it's gone in a direction that's kind of unique to Toronto, where the real estate boom has gone on so long that every last postage stamp of property is worth a lot of money for many different purposes, but especially condominiums. And so while I expected some of these old factories to be redeployed in interesting ways and to create a kind of arts and theater and whatever else, corridor, coffee shops, instead it's become a hot property for condo developers and quite a number of projects, one of the biggest in Canada, the Galleria at Dufferin and Dupont, sort of the heart of the street. These have come along in the interim and sort of changed the direction of the street.
Where did you see it going in 1998? What would you have predicted back then when you wrote your first piece?
Well, the first piece starts off with a visit to this gear factory at Dupont Street in Ossington. For out-of-towners, it was a huge old complex consisting of a sawtooth roof factory building, and on the side, very prominently at an important downtown corner, a giant steel greenhouse, as they called it, where huge gears were made for the St. Lawrence Seaway. So back then I met the owner of this property, who I interviewed again for the latest story, and he had just acquired it, and he was very tentatively trying to recycle it as a kind of lofts for anything he could rent to people to accomplish. It wasn't housing. He was going to rent it out to every little incubator option that he could find. And he had really done quite well doing that already. And that, I thought, was the prototype for the future, as it is in many cities where old industrial areas find new uses.
Mm-hmm. There are residences along DuPont Street and around DuPont Street. And I think over the last years, as we've looked at it and talked about it, there was talk of, you know, breweries and stuff coming in and more patio culture and things sort of aimed toward residents on a street that was never really a big walk-by street. What did you think was going to happen residence-wise in 1998 in terms of increase of housing? If not condos, what did you see? Where did you see that going?
The traffic is so fierce that it kind of, I expect that it would just keep values down, so it becomes, it would remain as sort of a fairly low-end, middle-brow housing, apartments in row houses. All along the street, there's these old houses that have been, some of them cut up into a couple of apartments. The traffic is so heavy that you have a hard time imagining the lives within, although I think we've discovered that there are many and varied lives along the street, living quite discreetly in different ways. But I expected that the housing would continue. I expected some of the gentrification, which we kind of described, like the coffee shops, would come along. But even in 1998, by the way, coffee shops were not yet what they became. Mm-hmm. I remember visiting San Francisco in 1995 and seeing all these coffee shops everywhere and thinking it kind of remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
So that era hadn't yet begun.
So what is DuPont Street now? What did you observe in your piece?
It became marketable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the marketing of it is kind of a construct in which you look at its interesting shops and it's all its best features, and you cherry pick those and you put together a really beautiful brochure and extol the virtues of old Toronto and all the accomplishments of the street. I had to laugh that some of the brochures for the condos actually directly quote my 1998 essay about the greatness of the street and all it has done. And that's sort of how it has become, that it is a commodity that's being marketed. I think it's a bit of expediency in there, because the street in many ways remains the same gritty street with very heavy traffic. Driving there is almost a sport. I find it very difficult to drive there because I try to drive reasonably slowly, but that's not what most people want to do. Again, in so many ways, it has stayed the same as the economy around it has changed and as real estate values have grown. The spirit of it seems very much like it was. It's a very busy place.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, with all those condo buildings going in, that's obviously those buildings all have, you know, parking garages and that sort of thing. They're geared to more traffic. That's not going to encourage more people walking on the street, but is it going to make traffic even worse?
Well, actually, I beg to differ on that point, because most of these buildings are replacing older businesses that did have parking lots. Like supermarkets with big parking lots are now supermarkets in a condo, in the first floor of a condo with underground parking.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I would say that the big plus will be that inevitably all these people living along DuPont are going to be walking along DuPont. And they are also going to be taking the bus or the subway, which comes through at DuPont Subway. And this is a positive, although I think it will be happening very discreetly. You're not going to one day wake up and say, oh, look at all the people running around on DuPont, because the traffic I don't think is going to go down. Whether density, like high density housing, increases traffic, I think this is a bit of a NIMBY. I don't know, it's a bit of a Trojan horse. It's not, finally, there's not much in there, because most people who move into these condos are living downtown, they're working downtown, they may own cars, you keep those in the basement, but you live your life a good part of the time just by stepping outside.
You mentioned the bus. The DuPont bus is not currently a very reliable bus. And, well, it's reliable, but it's not
once
very
a month.
It's not a very frequent bus, is the issue.
No, well, that actually is a story, because the ridership collapsed when all the factories closed. When I wrote my first essay in 1998, the American Standard plant that made bathtubs and toilets and sinks and so on was one of the last holdouts, just at that time, nearing the end of its run. And each day, as I describe in the essay, thousands of people would come to DuPont Street to their jobs. And the ridership collapsed. The trolley bus was removed. Those were electric buses that Toronto had quite a few of. They were kind of between a trolley, between a streetcar and a bus, for those who might not know, because they're not very common anymore. That had been removed. Ridership just kept going down, from what I understand and could observe. Intervals between transit vehicles became ridiculously long, so you would never actually stand on Dupont. I think things will get better as the people move there, inevitably. And there are many really good possibilities in the arrival of so many people on the street. Notwithstanding, they're coming on a bit of a construct. It's still the same street that everybody else called gritty just a few years ago.
So I know, as we worked on this piece to get it to press, several things on DuPont changed. They changed very frequently. They changed several times. This piece was finished and about to go to press, and we had to make a lot of changes. Things were happening very rapidly. What were some of the notable things for you? Because I know you frequent a lot of places on DuPont. You know a lot of shop owners there. What were some of the things that you saw?
Well, COVID-19 came along, and it made it very difficult to report on the piece. There's only, I think, one or two phone interviews that took place to get it. I just didn't find phone interviews when you're talking about a street. They don't work very well. But I would go out walking the street, and I could get into coffee shops during COVID. But if you wanted to get a little deeper in, like a developer's showroom for his condos, presentation center, right? Or, for example, 888 DuPont, which is an important character in the current story. This is a factory that had been used by people to sort of a lofts to do art in and lofts to live in. And it had all kinds of interesting history. It was once a broom factory for the blind. That was an important building because it had been bought by a developer, and it was a case study of how the street is changing. And I wanted to include it and portray some of the people in it. But at the height of COVID in early 2021, I was doing my research, and I kept going up to this building trying to get people to talk to me. There's a little park on the side, sort of an impromptu, and I'd go there, and there would be people who would appear, and I'd try to talk to them. There was a window open one day onto Ossington, and I thought, oh, here's my chance. There was somebody inside. They just came up and closed the window. So COVID made it like all the casual encounters that a good reporter can seize upon. Oh, this is my chance. They didn't work very well. People were very on guard. And so the street seemed to have a personality that was just a little less friendly than I was accustomed to, having walked it so much. But we persevered. That's what the reporter's supposed to do, right?
He did make it in eventually.
We did. It's,
we both did,
yes. It felt like being a young kid, a cub reporter, because I was with you that day, and we were walking DuPont, and we walked by, and the building has a kind of our apartment house admission system where you buzz and say, oh, who's this? Oh, it's so-and-so and so-and-so. I'll let you in. Well, I had tried that, but what do you do? Say, I'm a reporter. I'm spreading COVID, and that hadn't worked. But we managed to just slip in like you do sometimes, and we walked through the building, and that was really pretty much a revelation in that it was just, I think the reporter in the post-newspaper age or whatever we're living through loses sight of the fact that if you go to a place, you get a very different story than if you just talk to people over the phone. It was quite a building. It's coming down now. So yeah. It made it into the essay, I think, with the full dimensions that we sought.
I know your favorite car wash closed as we were wrapping up this piece. That was on DuPont.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm the only journalist who's written like a series of pieces about life at the car wash. In case, car wash, I'm told by the owner of that car wash, who's gone now, but that car washes just don't cut it in the 21st century, that it's not a priority for people. COVID was sort of like the nail in the coffin. And that the car wash as an institution, there are connoisseurs, there will always be, but a car wash is in Toronto, a very difficult use to support because the business is just tepid. It's tepid. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed going there, and there's a whole culture, which I described in an early version of the story, but perhaps got a little out of hand, but a culture there where you would meet people, you spray wash your cars, these coin-operated self-serve wash places, and you coin up your car in the bay, you wash it, you take it outside and you dry it, and that's where the culture existed, and you would communicate with people, And it was a bridge-building event because you would find people from all walks of life. The street, of course, is between Forest Hill and all of downtown. So you'd find, you know, I don't know if Ken Thompson did his own car there ever, but I've met plenty of pretty high-end cars and interesting people and others who were in their beaters and just wanted to tidy up. And it's a great little story to tell that not too many journalists have told, and I did work it in.
I know your auto mechanic is on DuPont, and he's probably getting close to retirement age at this point. What was his theory about the future of his space?
Well, he hummed and hawed about electricity. And basically, he knows I'm a reporter, and he said to me, well, everybody's reading more than ever, but you can't buy a newspaper at the corner store. And he was referring to how electric cars have a whole different maintenance regime that actually is really works in favor of the consumer, at least. It looks like it will, because they have so many fewer complicated burning fires in them and mufflers and combustion compartments and so on. And so he's been converting his place. He's been taking up classic cars. He figures they will hang on. It's actually kind of a brilliant move, isn't it?
I mentioned at the top that this your original DuPont piece has been incredibly popular over the years. It went online back in 2000 when we launched our website, and it's often referenced and shared online still. It gets read a lot. It gets talked about. It's been referenced in multiple other news stories. It's a great story for one, but obviously you hit a nerve of some kind with people. People really took to this story and were interested in it. Why do you think that is? What do you credit that to?
Well, the easy answer is that the journalist is never sure what's going to be a hit. And you write things that you think are great and someone groans and nobody pays much attention. What did it? I think that so many people are, the street touches so many people every day, and you go buy things and you say, oh yeah, that. And so when you refer to something that people see every day, there's an innate curiosity, like the Gear Factory in particular fascinates people. There's also an old Ford plant at Bathurst and DuPont. Most people seem to know that it was a Ford plant where they made the cars on these multi-story building, shipped them out on the train tracks. They could bring box cars right in. There was a track on the roof to start the cars up and roll them around. The building was designed by Henry Ford's Detroit architect, Albert Kahn. And it kind of dominates views of the street up and down yet to this day. And it's landmarks like that, when you refer to them, they do tick with people. They tick or check off some curiosity that they have. And maybe that is what did it, because there are so many things on DuPont that might not be beautiful, but they're memorable. And then when you start to look into their stories, they kind of rise in the level of interest that they have to offer, right? The Fords being sold in a showroom filled with potted plants while they're built right upstairs.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you picked a good length of a street, too.
It was long enough for me. To be honest, it was a very challenging piece to write because a street is an amorphous thing. There are a million things, little things, that occur at any moment, and you sort of have to abstract a story out of it that actually has some that rings true. You can make all this stuff up. You can talk about, oh, there was a speck of dust floating in the air one day. Well, that's not a story, is it? But I've watched it for 40 years. Now, if I had moved away, of course, that never would have happened. But I just happened to be here, and you just happened to watch it. And it's interesting to see things change and change again and change again, and you begin to feel like you're sort of a privileged viewer, and you want to make sense of it for people. It was very hard to do that. I found the interviews hard to get, and I found people's level of interest in the somewhat esoteric things that a street offers is limited. They're interested in the success of their coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And the meta question about the meaning of DuPont is a tough one to get people going on. So it's your responsibility, actually, to make some sense of it by going around and talking to people and seeing what they do say.
This may not be a question you can answer, but obviously every street changes, every city changes over time. Do you see the changes in DuPont as a positive or a negative?
Well, someone wrote a headline. It was a provisional headline over the story. It is Return to Zenith. Mm-hmm. And once in a while, I have to look up words that I use.
That was probably me.
It was. Yeah. And so then it was just a provisional headline, you said. But then I looked up Zenith again, and it means sort of something at its height of greatness. And that's sort of what the idea was when the street was this industrial powerhouse, where a tremendous accomplishment took place. I mean, maybe I should just mention, for example, the gears for the Avro Arrow superjet, supersonic jet fighter, the famous one. They were made at Hamilton Gear, and so were gears from the St. Lawrence Seaway. So all of this is easy to understand. So Return to Zenith was the headline, and the more I thought about it, I thought it was kind of good because it's aspiring to be something else through the Toronto's real estate boom, and it is becoming something else. I'm not sure the tone of it. I'm sure it will always be a busy street, but it is seeking to be something else. And for the most part, the way to market condominiums is to suggest elegance, home, hearth, and happiness. And of all streets in Toronto, one of the grittiest, busiest streets, DuPont is being marketed as a place. And they have mined out, the marketers have mined out some of the history we described and discovered that it matters and can be sold. Mm-hmm. I'm not being too crass, I hope, but people like their town. Mm-hmm. And so I see it as a great positive. I see increased density on a busy street as a good thing. Like I say, people will park in the basement and then go out for a walk. I'm always telling people that the highest, best use of a car in the city is to be parked in an underground garage, mm-hmm. gathering dust.
Mm-hmm. What your mechanic said about his business changing in terms of, you know, newer cars don't require the same kind of care than they used to. That's a change that's just going to happen. That's just, for lack of a better word, progress. You can't do much about it. Has DuPont lost anything that you feel is unfortunate in your time looking at it?
That's a tough one because the street has been so ugly for so long. And the beauty that I see in things is not something that you can actually market very well to someone just walking by. My heartfelt answer is that it isn't losing much, that there are places like the Galleria Mall, which was a legend in itself because of its mediocrity. But that's the kind of legend that maybe we can let go of. The development there, which I describe in the essay, is actually gigantic. It's like a massive, massive development. It's anybody's guess whether it will have the elegance that you see in the very heavy-duty and delicious marketing for it, with videos.
Which is very often the case.
Right. So many of these buildings don't look as good finally when they're up as in these drawings. But it's a huge development, and it's going to put an awful lot of people, I shouldn't use the word awful, a lot of people in a very positive way on the landscape, in a place where it was all parked cars and there was a McDonald's at the corner of the lot. It was a huge property, once the home of American Radiator Company.
Yes.
Made radiators there. Mm-hmm. So it has been underutilized for a very long time. I understand there were issues in the soil, which is probably the case along DuPont frequently. But the development, as you look at it, is pretty intense and dense in a downtown kind of way. I find it very hard to convince people sometimes who are so used to deploring development that some of these things are going to be kind of exciting and we will have a city a bit more like New York. But we're headed there, and I think DuPont will be part of that. You may not recognize some of it, but as I say in the essay, it's a street that resists change too, and there's a lot of evidence that if you go there in 25 years, you'll be able to say, yep, this is DuPont, as you sort of run to get off the crosswalk before the cars start piling through.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, then, I mean, this might be another hard or impossible to answer question, but you mentioned that, looking back to when you wrote your first feature and now, DuPont went in a direction that you didn't expect. And I know we can't predict the future, but what do you predict for DuPont 25 years from now?
Well, where is Toronto going is a big question. I think it'll go where Toronto goes. And we have a real problem in that affordability is not available. Good housing is not available to young people at a cost they can afford. Surely there are market forces that will even this out, but we haven't seen it so far. So then will the street just become a bedroom community where people who can afford $2 million condos park themselves overnight and park their car in the basement? Or will people actually be going out, walking around and engaging with their neighborhoods? One of the features of Toronto, positive at times and negative at others, is how protective existing neighborhoods are of their buildings and fabric. Sometimes this means they resist change so fiercely that you can't do anything, and that in the end it looks like people are simply protecting their turf and not serving the public interest in doing so, or even their children's interest. But on the other hand, people do engage. Toronto has a long tradition of people engaging in their neighborhoods and having a bit of a say in the planning process. This has had many positive results. And I think on DuPont, there was a long standing planning. I think you would call it a philosophy that has been applied where you increase the density on the north side against the railroad tracks, on the south side against the neighborhoods, a little less intense. People don't get, it's on the south side, so you don't get huge shadows in people's neighborhoods. So my prediction is that it will all blend together fairly well, notwithstanding it'll be unaffordable for a lot of people.
Albert Holden's story, A Return to Zenith, is now available in Tattle Creek issue number 50, the 25th anniversary and final issue. Alfred, thanks for talking today. Thanks for the story, and thanks for all the stories over 25 years. You were here at the beginning, and you're here at the end, and it's certainly been appreciated.
It's been a lot of fun.